You are listening to the Valeo Mentis podcast.
In this episode, Sandy Leslie shares her journey from being a vet tech to becoming a practice manager in the equine veterinary field. She discusses the importance of communication, building a positive work culture, and the vital role technicians play in veterinary practices. Sandy emphasizes the need for effective hiring processes and the impact of technology on veterinary care. She emphasizes the need for work-life balance and the innovative approaches her practice is taking to adapt to modern demands.
Here on Valeo Mentis, the goal is to shrink the veterinary world by connecting people together through stories and helpful resources. So listen closely and enjoy.
Sandy Leslie, thanks for being on the podcast.
Sure. Happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, I'm honored. You know me because I serve you as an account. So just up front, I want everyone to know that connection. You work for Grand Prix Equine. It's a very fast growing, good environment from my perspective, but you've had a very successful environment. So I do want to go into that. Sure. But first off, where are you from originally and what got you into the horse world?
So I am from Stratford here in Connecticut. I'm about 40 minutes from the office. So I drive 40 to 45 minutes back and forth. And I don't know, I've always loved horses. I didn't start riding until I was 15. My grandmother loved horses. My mother loved horses. My older sister rode when she was younger. And my dad also rode. And I just kind of fell in love with, you know, horses and wanting a horse. And then I said, oh, I want to be a veterinarian. And then I was like, ooh, I don't know that I want that lifestyle. So I didn't go that route. So I did the next best thing. I went to school at UConn for animal science. And I ended up working a few different jobs prior to getting my first job as an equine tech. And I figured if I can't be a veterinarian, then I'll be the next best thing, which is a technician. So that's what I did.
Yeah. Awesome. What did you see yourself doing in the animal science degree? John has one. He lived in the meats labs at Penn State.
Cool. Yeah.
What other avenues?
Long story.
Thinking? Yeah.
You don't want to know what I had to do to get through college. Yeah.
You know, I took all that animal science stuff. So we did our beef classes and judging and saw them the week later in a different aspect, which, you know, wasn't always fun, but.
And a tastier aspect.
A little bit. But, so, you know, I just always wanted to be around the horses and work with them. And when I was in college, I did, you know, I was part of the riding team. I did vaulting, anything horse related there that I could do. I actually did a 2-year program called Radcliffe Hicks at UConn because I did start pre-vet at a different college and I quit before the end of the first year. And took a year off. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I'll commit for 4 years. So I did a 2-year program and then moved into the 4-year program to do that animal science degree.
If your family was into horses, how comes you didn't ride till you were 15? Because you were exposed to them before that, probably, right?
Yeah, well, actually, my sister is about 6 years older than me. So when she was riding, I was very young. And then she stopped. And, you know, it got so expensive that my dad stopped riding so that she could continue. And she just didn't continue it. And my grandmother just always had a love for them, as well as my mom.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know what it was. I did start riding and had, you know, took my lessons and just was like, I want a horse. And when I was in college at 21, I bought a 4-day-old foal.
Nice.
And my dad was like, you're never going to have a house. You're never going to have a car. You're never going to. I'm like, yes, I am. So I proved him all wrong and had all those and that horse and an additional one. So.
Wow. That's cool. My grandparents got me into horses too. I mean, they raised me until I was like 10 or 11 and it was just part of our life. Like, you know, we had horses and that's what we did.
Yeah.
So I got
And then just taking, you know, the love of that to, like I said, always having from a young age wanting to be a veterinarian and then was never good in math. So I figured that's not going to work, you know, as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's just changed so much. Like the hours worked back then are not the same hours work now.
Right.
You know, as far as an equine veterinarian. But it was just, I don't know, it was just a natural thing for me to go ahead and do. And in my first job, they interviewed me 3 times. And I was just, I felt really grateful because it was like an independent study, to be honest. I was getting paid to do an independent study is how I felt and just learned so much along the way.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I grew up on a horse farm and dad's a vet and mom bred warm bloods. And it was a picture of my sister and I on a horse. On a little saddle together at the same time. and grew up around it, and then went into finance, didn't want to be a vet, and then, you know, went back into animal health, small animal, worked at a clinic, and then worked for Harvard Polo. So I wanted to be around the horses, but that wasn't necessarily the right thing. And then, yeah, I kind of transitioned into where I'm at now, but now I feel lucky because even though I never wanted to be a veterinarian, now I get to kind of be around horses and be around, you know, that world.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I often blame my parents for, you know, me still having three horses, me still riding. You know, you're kind of willing to put whatever financial stress that it requires to do it.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember for when I acquired my second horse, he was a rescue and they were going to give him to somebody who had horses who lived outside all day long. I'm like, please don't do that. Please don't do that. And I bought him for $1. And then I was like, how am I going to afford two horses? And I've spent 2.5 years at one point taking care of about 20 horses every Saturday and Sunday. I'd go in the morning, I'd feed, I'd turn out, clean stalls, clean the barn, get the hay, set up the water, bring them back in, and did that every weekend for 2.5 years. And fortunately had the support of my family. Like my mom would come up with my nieces and nephews and they would all help. And, you know, it just made it a fun time.
You bought a horse for $1. That's cool. I because, did. You know, we always say the cheapest part about a horse is buying one. And
exactly.
That was very true in that situation.
Like, give me $1. I'm like, here you go.
Yeah.
So, no, good. It was great.
Yeah.
That's
and again,
sweet.
I assume like any horse person, you do, you know, especially when you're young and you get your horse. I mean, for me, I was 21 when I got my first horse, but still, I was still in college. You know, that was the fear of my parents. Like, oh, how is she going to deal with it? I'm like, I have it all planned. By the time I graduate, he's going to be ready to be broke and ridden. And I got it all planned. Don't worry about it. But, you know, the parents who were not maybe so supportive with that plan in the beginning, you know, is the dad that ends up and getting like a truck to pull a trailer and co-signing a loan for a trailer and, you know, all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Once they see that dedication.
Yeah. And, you know, I was just talking to a client the other day and she was talking about, you know, her horse gets this and her horse gets that. I said, gosh, I remember like my horse needs shoes and my horse needs a blanket and my horse needs, I didn't buy anything for myself during that time. I'm like, it was all for my horse.
Dang.
That's crazy.
Well, I got so many questions. So here's one, right? This is the most important and burning one. So my daughter's 1 year old. Okay. My wife's like, when are you going to buy her a pony? She's always like, daddy's going to buy you a pony. And I'm like, hi. My wife doesn't come from a horse background. So she doesn't know what that entails. And I'm like, hey, look, we can go and do this, but we're going to be broke. Just so you know, it's going to be horses and that's all we're going to do. So she doesn't quite grasp that concept. And I can't wait to introduce her to it. I'm excited for that. But my big question for you is how long did horses keep you out of boys?
Well, I'll tell you, not that long. Like, wait, let me think. Well, I was 15 when I started riding and I was 16 when I was like, oh, you're pretty cute.
So it didn't work.
Not long, son not long. It. And you know, my boyfriend at the time, now husband, when we were dating, you know, I was like, this is like, you know, a package deal here. You get me, you get the horse. So
yeah,
you decide.
Yeah.
You know,
many a man has had to make that decision.
Always going to be with my horse. Yeah.
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 Yep.
That's great.
My wife's very forgiving of me just because, you know, she knew what she was signing up for.
Yeah.
I constantly have to show her the contract, but she knows what she signed up for.
You signed this, remember?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's
exactly.
Good. Well, so one thing that strikes me about you just meeting you is that you are an excellent communicator. Tell us about your transition from being a vet tech into practice management. And I'm sure that your communication has had something to do with that, I'm sure.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. I think, you know, I think there were like a lot of skills there. And not to like pat myself on the back, but I think it takes a lot of those skills to transfer into each of the positions that I've been in. So I started out as a technician. I was a tech on the road for 5.5 years. I worked at a top level equine hospital. That's the one where I felt very fortunate to work with the doctor that I worked with and learn, you know, everything from them. I was part of the surgery teams. In those days, we always tell our technicians now, back then, you know, you guys have it made compared to what we had to do. You know, we'd work on the road, and if we got a colic cut and we had to do a surgery, we were the technicians assisting in that surgery. And then we had to figure out, okay, who's going to sit with that horse after surgery until the next person comes in at 6 a.m. So we had very long days. You know, we'd sit with them 3 nights after the surgery type of thing. But I went from a technician and doing that for 5.5 years. And then my husband and I wanted to start a family. And, you know, it was kind of more the, you know, well, if you start a family, you can't really be on the road. And that, you know, never happened, which is fine. But I still came in off of the road and went into a receptionist position. And I think it was just more, you know, I like to talk to people. I enjoy helping, which is kind of that, I don't know, I guess that servant attitude to just help and you know, solve problems and just be there, you know, to coordinate things and help do that type of stuff.
Yeah.
So I came in as a receptionist, but only under the understanding that I could still be on call for if there was surgery and I could still occasionally go on the road if needed, because, you know, I loved the horse stuff. I loved doing the horse stuff and being out there and doing that. So I came in as a receptionist, and then that just kind of gradually grew. From there, I became an office manager. I was part of an arthroscopic surgery team as well. We had arthroscopic doctors that came into that other hospital, and I was always the technician that was there to prep the horse and assist in those, you know, be the tech in the room, not assist the doctor, but, you know, get the instruments ready and do all that type of stuff and prep the horse for those types of surgeries. And then from there, at the other practice that I was at, you know, it was a hospital office kind of thing. And I kind of felt that there was just a disconnect between the office side and the hospital side. Mm-hmm. And it took me a long time, but I came up with a letter, and I, you know, I presented it to the owners of the practice at the time. And I said, this is what I'm thinking you need. This is what I'm seeing. This is what I think is going on. And I'd like to be your manager of operations. And they discussed it amongst themselves and they agreed. So I was manager of operations there for a few years. And then I've also been, you know, that client service coordinator position. Wow. So, and I think it's, you know, just those skills, like the communication, the teamwork, you know, critical thinking, you know, just the leadership aspect and being able to multitask. I know people say there's no such thing, but I disagree.
Yeah.
Because I multitask, I think, a lot.
And triage, and yeah, you've got to pick your priorities, and you've got
to. Yeah, I mean, yeah. You know, I mean, I'll have somebody sitting in here talking to me in my office, and I'll be sending an email, and they're like, how do you do that? And you're still understanding what I'm saying. I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I'm hesitating. Who knows? But,
well,
you know.
Back to that letter, the bravery must have been, I mean, I don't know. Did you feel like real nervous when you were giving it to him? Like,
yeah, that was my question.
I didn't feel nervous. It took me a long time to write it. I mean, I spent months, like 3 or 4 months, just getting it right and what I wanted to portray and what I wanted to say and have it clearly understood. And, you know, took the thoughts of each of them in mind, like who, you know, what would they think? How would they accept this? And, you know, fortunately for me, I had been there for quite some time before I did this. So they all knew me well enough. And when it was just a really nice, a nice feeling, you know, that they all accepted it and said, have at it. So yeah. I was like, great. Yeah.
And they knew that you cared enough to bring that to their attention.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, when I was fortunate enough that Mark Baus, Dr. Baus, who I work with here at Grand Prix Equine, was one of the founding doctors of that practice. So I've known him for over 30 years, you know, so that was, you know, that was a good thing, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
It was a nice thing.
And it worked out. It worked out well.
You know? Well, yeah, that's somebody that knew me and, you know, knew of my capabilities and knew, you know, how long I had been there and the dedication and the fact that, like you said, I looked and saw where I thought there was a hole that needed to be filled and took that time to actually take the time to present that position and say, if it works,
so that
great.
Position didn't exist at the time.
It did not exist.
Yeah. Okay.
No.
That makes
no.
sense. Yeah.
Yep.
Would you mind sharing what were some elements of that letter that you proposed?
Gosh, it was so long ago, Ryan. Honestly, okay. I don't even remember.
Okay. Well,
I think it was more, yeah. You know, I think it was more just in my, however many years I had been there at the time and my experience in being here. And this is what I'm seeing happen. Like, this is happening over here and this is happening over here. And there's really no connection, even though they were all under the same roof, there was really no connection between the two. And it was more to kind of bring both sides together and be like, you know, we're one team, very similar to how it is here, you know, at Grand Prix Equine, you know, the way we all work together here and we get together, you know, every 2 weeks for a meeting here with the entire staff. It was just seeing things that I felt were falling through the cracks or just, you know, not having things paid attention to or delegating certain things or, you know, just people not being responsible for their positions. And just said, hey, what do you think about this? I'm sure I have it somewhere in my records, but it was so many years ago.
Yeah.
Curious. Yeah. And I promise I won't dig too deep on this letter.
That's okay.
No, but when you propose something like that, things, they've done certain things for a certain period of time. There's that whole book called Who Moved My Cheese? And, you know, there's, everyone's got personalities, right? And so I just wonder if you ruffle some feathers and if there's some people that had to adjust to your.
If I did, I wasn't really aware of it.
Okay.
But it's funny that you mentioned Who Moved My Cheese, because somebody had mentioned one time to me to read that book. You know, I tend to be outspoken and not particularly fond of change. I think I'm different now than I was then, but I always didn't like change. Mm-hmm. And if I remember correctly, isn't that what that book has to do with? Mm-hmm. I don't know if I read it, to be honest with
you. I didn't read it either,
like, I'm not reading that.
But yeah.
Who Moved My Cheese?
Yeah.
Don't
yeah.
touch my cheese.
Tell everyone the geography of your practice, which is very big. And then
it's very big. Yeah, tell it's us very that big.
First and then.
Sure. So we are located, our main office is located in Newtown, Connecticut. And then we have a doctor that lives in Bedford, New York, and she works primarily in the New York, Connecticut area. We have three doctors. We currently hired one in July that are on Long Island, and they go to the North Fork as well. And then the other end of the state, up by the Durham area. We have one of our veterinarians there, and then further up in, like, I think it's like Glastonbury. She goes there and into Massachusetts. And then we do have a doctor who goes to Florida. She's there from this year, December 15th, until March. So we have a pretty broad coverage area here. There is, I'm trying to think how many doctors we have here now. We hired so many this year.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
We did a lot. We did a lot of hiring this year. There's 23 employees total, and there are 12 doctors, I think. Three. Are we up to 12? I don't remember. I think
that's
so.
That's fast growing change right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do your remote sure. doctors come in for the every 2 weeks to meet?
They do. Yeah. So wow. We have our doctors. Well, our doctors on Long Island, they rotate so that there's still coverage out there. One of them is here. There's still somebody out there to handle any emergencies or anything that comes up. Now that we have two, it's even better now because we have three of them there. One will come here and then two will stay there, but they zoom in to those meetings.
Yeah. Good.
So we have everybody together as a team.
That's cool.
So Connecticut,
yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. So Connecticut's a square state, but Long Island is not a very simple area to work in. So just explain to the audience the logistical challenges, the seasonality challenges that come with Long Island.
Yeah. So, well, Long Island, for the longest time, we just had the one veterinarian that was there. And then it was 2 years ago, this past July, that we had hired the second one. So one of them was there by herself. But we, at the time, we did not go to the far end of Long Island. We really didn't do that work. The practice has also, since I've been here, I've been here 8.5 years, I think now, we have purchased three other practices, which have made us grow. And they're single doctor practices. And that's what happened with Long Island. So we had purchased a practice about a year ago, year and a half ago, I believe now. And that's the doctor that actually worked on the, you know, Montauk area of Long Island and that, you know, where they hold the Hampton Classic and all those areas. I don't know the names of the towns, sorry. I just know like near and far, near and far, Long Island.
The East Forks, yeah.
Yeah. So she's that doctor that we hired once we purchased that practice. We absorbed those clients if they chose to come with us, which we were happy that the majority of them did. And we absorbed those clients. And now that one doctor mainly works in that area, while the other doctor is near, I call it near and far Long Island. And then the third doctor is kind of like, you know, in the middle or goes to either end, depending on what is needed by the clientele out there. You know, and as far as the seasonality, you're talking like as far as like when we're really busy during wellness time.
Well, then there's Florida as well. Yeah, a lot of them go to Florida. Yeah, high-end sport.
Yeah,
work.
So a lot of the clients there go to Florida. And then we have a doctor here that goes down there for 3 months. And then the doctor on Long Island will go like, you know, maybe for a week or so as well to see, you know, specific clients that want to wait for her to come out there.
So other than the meeting you have every couple of weeks, what creates the connection within your practice? Obviously, there are personalities like you that, you know, feel that people feel psychologically safe around. I'll just use that terminology. But
Yeah. No, yeah. I think it's great. So here, you know, at this practice, when I started, it was Mark and his technician, Jill, and then Johanna and Ella. But it's grown so much, and I wish I could pinpoint exactly what it is that we do to hire. Jill is very involved in the hiring. So Jill will get all the people that want to work here, and then she and I meet with them and we interview them. And we do a pretty in-depth interview process here. First, you know, Jill and I will meet with them, and then we'll have them come back for a working interview. And then that veterinarian will meet with them, and their technician will meet with them. And I wish I could say exactly what it is that we do to make everything work so well. We kind of say there's like this, like the magic sauce. We don't know what it is. We really don't. But Dr. Baus had done a talk, I think at AAEVT last year, one of the annual conventions, where he spoke for the veterinary technicians. And he talked about our whole process. And he asked Jill and I those same questions, like, well, what do you guys do? How do we hire? And we're like, I don't know. It just works. It just seems to work, you know. And just going back to when we started this interview, I have only had to let one person go. And I've been here, like I said, you know, 8.5, almost 9 years now. So the culture here is one of, I think it's mutual respect. The people that work here genuinely like each other. A lot of times when we talk to people and we interview them, we tell them that. And we're saying, we're not trying to pat our own back because we work here. We just want you to know what kind of environment you're in. And then we have a lot of our intern, extern applicants that come in and spend time with us, or extern applicants that come in to be an intern. And the amount of feedback that we get and just the thank you cards that they send us are like, you know, you guys, it was so great being there and you were all so nice. And it's not an act. You know, it's not like, okay, somebody from the outside's coming in, let's just be nice. It's just not like that. I mean, it's just natural, you know, how we are and how this group is together, you know, and genuinely respect each other and like each other and get along, you know. And if there is those little bumps in the road, if something's happening, we deal with it right then and there. It's not something that, you know, will fester and you need to talk about it.
Yeah. I've heard that before. In fact, on our last interview, the person that we interviewed was talking about how they have a very set culture, directives and goals and values, and they pick people that fit with that. And then if you do that, everything else seems to fall in place. And it sounds like you guys have fulfilled that philosophy too.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, that's a culture that, you know, Dr. Baus started when he started Grand Prix Equine, and then Johanna came on board, and it's just a culture that we continue to have. And it's just a, you know, like I said, it's just a very positive, fun environment to be in. You know, one of the things that I think is especially important is they understand, like, you know, for us in the office, especially, like, if I needed to go to a doctor's appointment today at 2:00, they'd be like, okay, sure, no problem. You know, it's not, you know, they understand, like, you have lives, you know, outside of being here all the time.
Right. Yeah. Right. It was interesting with the last interview, Dr. Staten also said that people will police each other. You know, they have standards, like, for example, they don't swear. Mm-hmm. And so when someone does something out of line, the group will say, hey, you know, we don't do that around, you know, they kind of point it out. Yeah. So is that stuff written down somewhere? Is there a code of conduct?
We do have an employee handbook.
Okay.
So, you know, again, when I started here, because I came from the environment that I came from, again, there was only 4 of them here. So there wasn't, you know, they didn't have an employee handbook. There wasn't standard operating procedures. There wasn't, you know, these rules and regulations. There wasn't the GPE tips and tricks for new hires that, you know, one of our technicians has created. So that stuff all kind of came into place. You know, when I started kind of putting those things in with staying away from the not being like corporate type of thing. You know, where we are one of the largest privately owned equine practices around here, which is for us very important for us because no one's dictating how we practice the medicine. So I think that's a really positive thing as well with Grand Prix Equine. But all those procedures and things are now in place. So we have an employee handbook. We have a GPE tips and tricks for new hires, for new veterinarians. We have an onboarding process for when we hire them. They know, you know, who to go to. We have our organizational chart, you know, all those types of things that weren't necessarily there in the beginning when there was only 3.5 to 4 people working are now there with the group that we have.
So it's obviously a positive environment to work in. Everyone gets along. What builds the ownership of wanting to perform at a high level? Because it is a very demanding career path. How do you get ownership into your mission?
So you mean how, like, our veterinarians who are associates become owners?
Or, you know, if getting part, you know, partnership, or just how the, you know, like you say, you have meetings every couple of weeks and they feel ownership and they get to speak up and things
like
that.
So that's one of the things that part of our culture, like we've always said from the beginning, is this is a very transparent practice. And when we sit at that table and there's all of us around, you can't tell, like, there's a, like, different levels. Like, it's not like, okay, here's the owner veterinarians, here's the associates, here's the management team, here's the technicians. Everybody has the ability to have a voice and say what they're thinking and share their thoughts. And that's something that they've always made known from the very beginning, that, you know, don't be afraid to say, can we do this? Or are we doing that? Or, you know, how about we try this? And I think that gives everybody the ability to be comfortable in that space and to be able to do that and share that, if that answers
the
question.
Yeah, listening.
For sure.
A lot of empowerment with that too, especially when you act on what they suggest and what they want.
Yeah, and the other thing that we do here too, you know, our technicians are very different. I mean, I've been on different meetings and in different vet tech meetings as well. And what it sets our technicians aside from other practices is the way that we utilize our technicians here, and it makes them fulfilled in their jobs. So they're the first point of contact for our clients. Unless it's a brand new client that talks to our office, they're the first person that they speak directly to the client. They send the client agreement form. They're giving them pricing. They're setting up the appointments. The client has direct communication with that technician. After that first appointment, you know, we're sending welcome letters to those clients and following up with them about their appointment. But the technician has a really big role here. Where other practices, it may be the front desk makes the appointment. The doctor goes and the technician really just kind of either holds a horse or scrubs a joint or something like that. Our technicians really have add a lot of value to their doctors. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, aside from their technical role, they each fill a specific role. Like we have one technician who does our social media. We have one technician who's our equipment manager. We have one technician who's in charge of our wellness plans. We have another technician who does the, well, she used to be a technician. She's not anymore. She moved away from us, but she still works with us. And I guess, you know, maybe that's really a good example of Grand Prix Equine and how they are, that we have a technician who moved to Wyoming and is still working for us on a part-time basis. And she's not working as a technician, but she's doing like administrative stuff for us. And I think that's really a nice testament to this practice and wanting to be still a part of this group.
If I was a veterinarian, I'd want to have a tech like, yeah, like she's actually describing.
Yeah. And she's actually also the intern extern coordinator. So, you know, they each have their own little niche, however you want to say the word. They each have their own besides their technician job.
Yeah. When you're talking about this, I'm like, I'm just thinking like, it's like high levels of trust create high levels of efficiency.
Yeah.
That's probably true throughout any aspect of our lives.
Yeah. And they're all, you know, and they're all very good at what they do and they love their jobs. You know, the other thing that this practice is really good at is the recognition of their technicians. It's also a fun, competitive group. I don't know if we told Ryan that.
A healthy, fun, competitive group.
You know, like they'll do their inventory counts. Like that's another thing that we do as a practice is every 2 weeks we do a top 25 inventory count. And, you know, we're getting where there might be misbilling or something didn't get transferred from the pharmacy to their vehicles. And so we do that every 2 weeks, every quarter, we do an inventory count. And then at the end of the year, we do like silly prizes. You know, we have little crowns that like you won inventory this, you know, this quarter. So you get to wear this crown for the day. They'll get gift cards, a bottle of wine, a massage, you know, something. And we're always recognizing, you know, they're always, I think, recognizing their technicians, whether it's just from a simple thank you at the end of the day, to, you know, something bigger just to say how much we value you.
Yeah, I'm curious about the financial side of things in inventory because I was at a conference last week and we were having a tech roundtable and one of the doctors said, yeah, you know, it's important that the techs, you know, take over like the putting things into the system that they give to the client because the vet was like, oh, that's a cute bit, you know, cute kid on a cute pony. I'll just give that, you know. And so you get all this, what do you call that, loss or...
Yeah,
on the inventory side.
Yeah, for sure.
Shrinkage. So you run a really tight ship, but it's a fun in a fun competitive way. And when you say the techs are the first line with clients, are the clients calling them before they call the vet? I mean, how does that work with boundaries? Yeah.
So basically what happens if, you know, if we have a brand new client that's calling here and they don't have any idea whatsoever who the veterinarian is, what area they're in, who they want them to, you know, to be their veterinarian, they'll call here to the office. They'll speak with Helen in the office. And basically she's going to gather their name, their information, you know, their name, their callback number, and what it is they're looking for and where the horse is located. And then what we do is then go to that technician and we give them that information. And the technician is the one that then makes that call to that client.
Wow.
You know, I got your message and they'll kind of, you know, for lack of a better word, like vet the client and be like, okay, you know, where are you located? What it is that you're looking for? And then if they need quotes, if they need pricing, they'll send that to them. And if, you know, if they say, okay, you know, I'd like to schedule an appointment, we'll send a client agreement form. Once that client agreement form is returned back to us is when we'll schedule that appointment and actually put it on our books. And then they just go from there and they're kind of in touch with that client from that point on, messaging them, you know, when they're on their way to the appointment, messaging if they're going to be late and just, you know, have that confirmation with them.
I'm sure production goes way up for,
yeah, for the veterinarian. You know, it's interesting. Our inventory, so we also have a locked pharmacy, which is a big deal. Whenever the technicians, anything they use out of their vehicle during the day, they're keeping track of. And then they either email preferably email, I think is what Jill wants in the pharmacy. They'll send an email and just say, this is the stuff I need to restock my vehicle. And then she gets it all ready for them and she leaves it in the tech area for them. So it's not like they're just walking in every night and picking stuff off the shelf. She's got that information in an email, and then she could be sure that they're making their transfers from the pharmacy into that truck. And I have to brag a little bit, because when we meet with, you know, our bookkeeper, we do also do a weekly meeting with our bookkeeper. Our cost of goods sold, when we meet with the owners, looking at those numbers are extremely, extremely good. Like, he's so impressed with the way the practice runs. Kudos to Jill for doing such an amazing job with the inventory. And it's a lot, you know, when you consider that your two biggest things are your payroll and your inventory, and the fact that we keep that really tight is good.
Right. Is your clientele buying, you know, from online pharmacies, or are they buying mostly from you?
It depends. They're, you know, we have, when she's away, I get to do her job. You know, I get a whole little sheet of like drop ship, you know, mm-hmm. where I'm doing drop ships, and I'm either calling one of the vendors directly to drop ship it, or I'm sending it here from this pharmacy. I can tell you, we had a meeting maybe 2 years ago. Johanna had attended a meeting, and we had a lot of veterinarians come here to this office, and they walked into the pharmacy, and there must have been 15 of them, and they're looking around our pharmacy, and they're like, this is all you have for 8 veterinarians at the time? And we were like, yeah. And, you know, because we're not in the business to sell drugs. It's not what we're about. It's not what we want to do. We're in the business to take the top quality care of your horse that we possibly can. So if there's drugs that you do need, you know, like I said, we either drop ship them or they can go to an online pharmacy. We do have also outline side online pharmacies. We'll get scripts all the time that will come in from, you know, a Valley Vet or a Farm Vet or something, and, you know, just wanting medications filled. Mm-hmm. And our doctors are fine to do that, you know, because like I said, we're not about selling drugs.
Yeah.
I think medications for horses, not drugs. No.
Yes. Yes. Medications for horses. Yeah. I think that's very, very healthy. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny you said that, because I tell people I sell horse drugs. It's the short answer for what I do.
Drugs. Right.
Yeah. Like, I sell horse drugs, and they're like, ooh. And I'm always joking with them. I'm like, yeah, they're really big ones, you know? And they're like, can you hook me up? And I was like, well, I could, but unfortunately most of them are in suppository form, so I'm not sure.
It's funny. No, I think going back, you know, to the technicians, just how important their role is here. And speaking from the veterinary technician side of things, and having, like I said, been at many meetings and large conferences where I actually did sit on a panel that unfortunately didn't develop into anything a few years back, about getting that solo practitioner to hire a technician and how much more efficient that technician would make that solo practitioner. You know, unfortunately, some of them just don't see it. Oh, yeah. They say, you know, if I buy that $23,000 ultrasound machine, how is that technician going to make me more efficient? You know, and it's like, well, you know, she's putting in all the information and she's prepping the horse and you're just sitting down and picking up that probe and she's doing your billing and you're able to go home to your family at night and she's doing your blood work and developing your radiographs. And I don't know where it's gone from here, but you know, a few years ago, I know it was still kind of a hard thing to get that solo practitioner to hire that tech. And they really are so, so valuable.
Yeah. A lot of those could be smoke screens. I think secretly a lot of those people just want to be left alone. They don't want to have to manage or deal with.
I like working by myself, doing what I want. Yeah.
Yeah. They figure it's going to slow them down, or then they got to deal with an employee. And
I don't think anyone would want to be my dad's tech. I mean, it'd be fun. It'd be fun, but it would be a lot to manage.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have a place to set the Zima if he had a tech in his truck.
Or all his post-it notes. And
the cooler everything would have to go in the back seat. That wouldn't work. Fishing around in the back seat for it while he's driving around the track. It'd be a mess.
So, John just says that because he was scarred. He had to go internationally with my dad on a couple trips to Australia and Ireland. He had to be his handler. So he's scarred and he's flashing out now. He hasn't dealt with that.
Still processing.
Still processing.
Dr. Joe Carter, Oklahoma Equine, he's one of our earlier guests, and he talked about how he was having struggles with interns or maybe externs that were just trying to get the credit and they weren't really, you know, good at getting up and working. I don't know. He just had some examples. And so he decided to go with three techs, and he said his production went through the roof. So have you ever considered what would ever happen with two techs with one of your vets? Is there a law of diminishing return? Or is that maybe just in a hospital setting? Yeah. Could you ever see one of your vets having two techs?
I think, so again, I'm just thinking back to the previous practice I worked for, that there was a doctor who had his technician and an intern and sometimes a second one. And I think it was just, you know, again, to be more efficient. I don't know, honestly, that it changed his production too much. Mm-hmm. We currently have a doctor whose production is through the roof with one technician, but I just think it's the, what's it called? The something of the beast.
Okay.
The nature of the beast.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
The nature of the beast, you know? That's a hard question for me to answer because I'm thinking about each one of our doctors. I'm like, would they, if they had two, would they do much more? If they did, would they, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Certainly we have certain doctors. I think that their production is that high that absolutely it would make their life a lot easier if they had two, or if they had the intern with them every day and a technician with them, for sure. For sure. And the tech and the intern that we have currently, she does her own scheduling. You know, hopefully she or the technician will ask to have her with them on those days that are going to be really heavy when they're seeing a lot of horses and doing that type of stuff. You know, Long Island and not so, you know, she was out there. I think she's supposed to go out to Long Island like a couple of times. I'm not sure the last time she was out there, to be honest. Now that you say that, I'm going to have to look at that to go out there and help those guys. But and some of them, I think, are so used to working with their technician, like they have it down to a science that it's like they don't want an interference of a third person or somebody they have to maybe teach that day if they're really, really busy.
Right.
But on the flip side of that, the days that they are scheduled and they know they have that intern, they're all so willing and happy, you know, to teach them. Because that, again, if you look at it, that's like a reflection of us. Once that person leaves here, that's a reflection of us. And right. We've actually had two of our interns that we've hired. So, I mean, they've just been that amazing. People were like, no, you can't go anywhere else. You have to stay here with us. So,
yeah. Last week when I saw Mark, he said, Heidi is always his tech. Heidi is mm-hmm. always ahead of him and always right. You know, yeah. It's just crazy, you know, to have that bunch of experience and have
And that's what we did. So we did here, Ella, Johanna's technician, just put together a tech CE day for us here in-house. And I had gone and spoken to them about like client service, customer service. And then we had Mark come in and do radiographs. And we had somebody come in and do, all within our practice, come in and do bandaging. And then our podiatrist came and spoke to them and did stuff like that. And, you know, the one thing that I've always said to them that what I feel my biggest learning was when I was a technician on the road, not only was I doing my job, but always keep your ear open to that doctor. Because whenever he's speaking to that client, you are learning so much. And if you hear him say, oh, we're going to, you know, we'll start him on SMZs, we're going to give him, you know, 12 tablets twice a day or whatever. And you hear that and you're bringing the x-ray machine back to the truck and you come back and you already have that medication in that bag with the horse's name and the directions on it. And he turns around and he says, hey, we're going to, and you hand him that bag. That's like impressive to them, you know? Yeah. But I also said to the technicians, you can learn so much just from listening to your doctors, you know, and that's one of the things that we try to just impress upon them. Always be listening and always be that one step ahead. Mm-hmm. It makes everybody's day, you know, happy and easy. And, you know, we also do that just made me when I said happy, we also all communicate on Slack. Mm-hmm. So we have like a general Slack and a random Slack and scope schedule Slack and office Slack. And so there's all these four categories, but the
Slack
random
or
one,
Slack.
Are just,
yep.
Oh my gosh, it's funny because it's just Slack or Slack. It's funny because it's just fun things throughout the day that they'll post, you know, like Helen today posted pumpkins that were painted like horses, just little horse heads and things. And it was just, you know, it's just fun things, you know, oh my gosh, look at this wound or you know, this mini, these kittens are at a barn. They need a home. So, you know, there's always that communication there too, that they make it fun throughout the day for the most part.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, it's pretty neat.
Yeah, I have a team of 10 and we have a group text going. And, you know, some people like that extra connection. They're posting funny things. You know, others are, you know, more reserved in the group. I have to put my phone on vibrate because it gets a little out of control sometimes. Like ding, ding, ding. But back to the interns. So since you've hired some, they've been a success. You've obviously found the right one. So when you're looking for an intern in the interview process, what are the things that you're looking for? What are the most important things you're looking for? And so you can maybe talk about some traits of some successful interns, because mm-hmm. you know there's the competency side,
yep.
which I'm sure they've got to be competent in what they already know.
Absolutely.
But there's also, you know, you can teach them things and then they have to be able to adapt to your environment and all that. So, yeah, what are the top traits of a good intern?
So I think the first thing is that they have to be able to take direction and be willing to learn. I think people have a certain level of confidence already built within them. I don't know that that's something you can necessarily teach somebody to have that confidence. And just how their communication skills are, like with our clients and with each other here. You know, like we always look at each other and we're like, oh, you know, we're each other's customers or we're each other's clients. So how do we treat each other with regard to that? But our interns are, you know, the current one that we just hired in July, we knew after 3 months that we wanted her. And she was just so well-spoken. She carried herself well. She was professional. She knew her stuff. And even though she was still a baby intern, like she may have been, I can't swear on this podcast, right?
Yeah. So
she may have been like pooping bricks inside during a case or something, but she never exuded that on the outside. She was always very confident. And she just, you know, they just fit well within our group. I don't know. They just, you know their stuff. And plus, you know, they let us know early on, like they want to be here. And the other thing with our intern process, every extern that comes through this door to stay with us, our intern extern coordinator interviews them, gets their cover letter, gets their CV, gets everything she needs to know about them, schedules them to be with us. We all usually get to meet them. Sometimes here in the office, we don't always see them because they don't always stay downstairs. We have an apartment downstairs for our intern, and the extern will share that apartment with the current intern. But then they send out a survey. So again, it's the entire practice that's giving feedback on this person. It's not just at the owner level, you know, that they're necessarily making this decision. It's the entire practice who gets to have a say and, you know, what was their, you know, interaction? What did they think about this person? What were their interactions? And again, just, you know, watching them in calls, like, are they stepping up? Are they being helpful? Or are they, you know, kind of a little wallflower being like, oh, I don't know what to do here, you know, type of thing. Hmm. So I think it's a lot to do with the personality. My thing is always you hire for personality. You can teach the skill part of it. You know, our technicians, we can teach them how to scrub a joint or how to hold a radiograph, you know, a plate, but you can't, you know, give them that personality that we're looking for. And just, you know, again, somebody who's going to get along with other people and just be a pleasant person that you want to see every day.
Right.
You know, they spend a long time in those trucks. So.
Oh yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Better get along, but better fit the mold. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just tell new reps that if I'm mentoring a new rep, I'll be like, I mean, this is a little bit different, but I'm like, you know, they're in their truck all by themselves all day long. And I'm like, you better like who you're in there with.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
That's too funny.
Mm-hmm. We're kind of getting close to the end of our hour. So I was curious to ask you about the state of things now in the industry from your perspective. And then what do you think the future holds for us? We haven't really had somebody of your, you know, in your position on our show yet. So I'm really curious to get your take.
So I think, you know, it's interesting because Jill and I are the ones that have been here like the longest as far as we worked at the previous practice together. So Mark, Jill, myself, and Ella all worked at the previous practice together before we came here. And, you know, Jill and I, because we've been here for so long, we're like, again, you know, oh my God, they have it so easy. Like, you know, we had to carry those big, heavy plates and we had to develop them every night and we had to do this. And if that shot wasn't right, you had to go back out and take that. And, you know, and then we were on call for surgeries and we had to sit up nights with sick horses and then we'd work all day the next day and we'd sleep for 3 hours. You know, we just think about how it's evolved from then till now and how much technology has, you know, played such a huge part in making the job so much easier. And not only that, but looking at the fact that it's, you know, now there's that, I don't know, that I want to say work-life balance because it's such a cliche. Like so many people are talking about work-life balance, but it really is, you know, those moms are able to be moms. Those, you know, equine vets who want to be moms are able to be moms and have their babies and be at home at a certain time. And, you know, here they design their schedules. Their technicians design their schedules, like what works. Like you can look at our schedule today and you'd be like, oh, this one's son has a doctor's appointment and this one's daughter has a play and this one's, you know, and I think you wouldn't think of that. When I was a technician on the road, you didn't do that. You were at work. You worked your butt off. You were on call. You know, that's what you did. And now it's like, you know, there's so many of us here now that it's nice that they're able to rotate their on call. So they're not on call as much that we have an intern and, you know, with our intern, they have a certain amount of time before they're like on call, but they always have that backup doctor with them. But again, it gives that doctor, you know, they rotate that as well. Who's the backup for the intern when the intern's on call? But, you know, as far as the future, like I like that they're able to have a life. that makes sense. You know, as far as the future, I honestly don't think a lot about, like, I know my plans for the future and where I'm going and what I'm doing. But as far as like looking at a whole industry and knowing what the future is, you know, that I don't know. I can say, you know, one of the things that, Mark said, we have a podiatrist here. So he's got a very different vehicle than the rest of them. We have all GMC like Yukons. And he has one of those vet trucks that's a special body and built. So we have one of our newest hire. We had a doctor who went out on maternity leave. So our newest hire was taking over some of her clients. And then she purchased a new truck. And she purchased a new truck that looks just like the Farrier truck. And it's pretty wild because I'm like, oh my God, she's so tiny and this thing is so huge. But it's like, I couldn't even barely close the door. I'm like, how is she going to close the door? And her technician. But it was, you know, Mark who said, you know, I think that's, you know, if you're talking about like their vehicles, he's like, I think that's the future of where the vehicles are going. That they're going to be that you're going to just open your doors on the side and you're going to have everything right there that you need. And you're not pulling stuff and moving stuff and trying to pull stuff out of these vehicles.
Right.
You know, walking up to like a food truck.
Yeah.
Thing, you know, you just open it up and okay, what do you need? You know, and it just makes for I'm assuming she likes it. We haven't really, you know, she's only been back a couple of weeks working out of it. So I'm not really sure how it's working for her.
Yeah.
But as far as the industry itself, my concern is that it's a lot of people are leaving the equine practice. Equine veterinarians are leaving the industry to go to small animal, you know, and that's where they have those set hours. And they don't have to worry about getting up for emergencies necessarily, depending on the clinic that they work at. But I just, that's scary. You know, the number of equine veterinarians that are leaving.
When you talk about work-life balance, it seems like your philosophy is more is less. So you hire more veterinarians, they share call, they're not as overtaxed. Mm-hmm. You obviously have the workhorses that are going to work even when you tell them not to. I can think of one.
I can think of one too.
Long Island. Yeah. But
he won't say her name.
And John knows her. But yeah. So it seems like, yeah.
You know who you are.
Love you.
And you have the best tech. So it seems like that's, you know, in your own, it's maybe those single vet practitioners that you're more, that I'd be more worried about that don't have that support.
Yes.
That haven't set that up around them, that don't have that infrastructure. You know, they feel more isolated and things like that. So it seems like you've created your own future that seems to be moving pretty fast and in a growth curve. I think it's really interesting hiring a podiatrist. So let's talk about that. I found out the other day, I met another podiatrist up in Saratoga, and he said there's only 17 podiatrists in the whole country. So veterinarian/farrier.
Yeah.
That's wild.
That's pretty wild, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's doing well. I mean, he's been busy. I know he was at an AEP. I don't know. Did you meet him?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So he's been doing well. And, you know, for both of them, our internal medicine specialist and our podiatrist, they both came from University of Georgia. They're a married couple and they both came from the University of Georgia. And it's kind of funny because they're still adapting to private practice. You know, it's just 10 years of being in a university and just, I don't know how universities work, but I know that we were joking with him about, he asked if I don't know, blood could be, he asked something to be something left. I'm like, you know, we can do that for you. And he was like, you know, well, usually where I come from, you know, it's 10 years of that's not my job, you know? I'm like, we don't do that here. And then he came in the office in the afternoon and he was looking for needles and he asked Jill, he's like, Jill, can you get me? I'm like, that's not my job. You know, like just joking with him type of thing. But yeah, as far as the podiatrists go, it's the word's getting around. We're really happy that he's here. And we've had, you know, a lot of new clients and existing clients come to use him. And he just, you know, loves what he does. And I mean, how cool is it to have a veterinarian who's also knows your feet?
Right.
And he's, you know, really good at what he does and continues his education. He was just in Columbia 2 weeks ago, I think, doing some sort of a certification. So it's cool because we're getting some really neat calls from clients being like, oh, I'd like to make an appointment with Dr. Beasley. You know, this is what's going on with my horse. You know, he doesn't have a technician yet. So we have Helen in the office handling all of that.
Now, would she be out there taking x-rays with him or
no? She's just doing his schedule right now.
Okay.
And what we do is like, if either of them need technical help right now, we'll make that happen. But we haven't yet hired technicians for them. That will eventually will happen. But just they've only been here 3 months, I think. So they're still kind of getting the lay of the land and, you know, the clients and things like that.
So he goes to competitions, like shaping shoes and making, like, is that like the journeyman farrier thing, right?
I don't know. Does he?
I don't know.
You know more than me, then.
I think he said he does. Oh. So when's he going to start making, like, you know, wine bottle holders and,
I know, right?
And trunk, you know,
my
handles?
My farrier, actually, I'll tell you, my farrier did years ago, and he gave it to Mark, and Mark probably still has it. He took a rasp and he made it into a snake.
Mm.
It was the coolest thing. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. Huh. Very cool.
I just have one more question and I'll let you go. Sure. And if John has anything else, but can you kind of explain to the audience what your clientele is like? This is north of New York City. It's a high-end sport horse, but you know, that's kind of the overall, that's how I would describe it. But mm-hmm. Tell me how you think that they are, I don't know, the demands of a high-end sport horse and how that might be different than another backyard trail riding horse or owner.
So first, we don't call them backyard. They're just smaller stables, smaller barns. But we do have a high end. We do have a high end sport horse medicine practice as well. But we also, you know, when Dr. Baus started the practice back in 2009, it was just he was by himself, and he basically did sport horse medicine. That was his specialty, was lameness and that type of work. And then after five years, he hired Johanna, and Johanna brought in kind of the wellness side of things. So we are, you know, I look at our practice as we do work on those high-end sport horses, but we also work on those horses that are the smaller stables, you know, mm-hmm. type of thing. So there's a variety, there's a range of the horses that we work on. Generally, it is the, you know, when you look at the doctors on Long Island, those are all the show horses. Those are the ones that are going to Florida. Those are the ones that are competing. We have some here in Connecticut that do the same thing. You know, they'll go down to Florida and you follow them there. We have, you know, clients that do that as well. But then we also, on the other hand, we have those doctors who they don't want to, you know, necessarily want to work on that high level sport horse. They don't want that pressure. They don't want, you know, they're like, you know what? I just want to go see the horse that's in, you know, in the smaller stable. I was going to say backyard, the smaller stable, you know, I want to go see that horse and take care of that horse and give him his vaccines and float his teeth. And, you know, he's lame. How can I help him? Or he needs his hawk injection because he goes to a couple shows a year type of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's just a, you know, it is an array depending on the doctor and the area that they're working in. Mm-hmm. You know, we do have the high end level at the other end of the state. We have Long Island, Mark, and then Caitlin works on a lot of those types of horses as well. But they all do sport horse medicine, if that helps.
Yeah.
You know, I think with Long Island, it's the quantity of the clients that are out there doing that type of work and with those trainers. But every doctor in this practice does work on the sport horse and the lamenesses and do all that as well.
And
I don't know if that answered it.
No, it does. And I can imagine there's another level where you feel like you have to travel with these horses around the world, which is I'm sure it's a lifestyle that you do for a period of time.
Yeah, no, it's pretty. And I had, at the previous practice, I had worked with a doctor that we worked on high level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we worked on Grand Prix horses. We worked on Olympic horses, level horses. You know, those are the types of things that we did. And again, it is, you know, like a lifestyle that, you know, they go to show or, you know, just follow them around and doing that stuff. But that they also spent the entire season in Florida, you know, taking care of these clients as well. And that's where we are going. You know, we have that one doctor who wants to be in Florida. So she went last year kind of on her own Grand Prix E. In the past, she had gone to, you know, do a few things for Grand Prix E and then work with another practice to help them out. Last year, she was solely Grand Prix E. This year, she'll be solely Grand Prix Equine. And, you know, just watching her growth and development there is really cool too, to have a presence there and have this practice, you know, a presence of this practice there as well.
And I'd also say that your social media is really good. I mean, you seem to be putting a lot of content out, and I think that's unique that you're marketing yourselves that way. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. You hired someone, right? Professionally.
Yes. Yep. We do have someone who does that. And then Heidi is our tech who has, you know, that's part of, aside from her technical job, she does the social media and the marketing and works with them directly and puts out all those, you know, I don't even know half the time what's happening, to be honest with you. I shouldn't say half the time. I never know what's going to come out on social media.
It's exciting.
Like,
yeah.
I see it on Instagram. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Oh, that's so neat. You know, all those things that are coming up and coming out, you know, so that's good.
Yeah, that's what I try to do for this podcast, but it's not my forte, but I do it at the low level.
You're doing a great job. You're doing
a great job. She'll help you.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, we need to hire people, John. What are we doing
here? I agree.
Yeah. Hire Heidi. You need a technician, like a technician of your own to make you that much more, better at what you do.
More productive. Yeah, we do.
Dang.
For sure.
Well, I'll put it in the expansion plan and we'll see,
There you go.
Yeah. Code of conduct.
Your manager of operations. Mission. Write that letter.
We don't have a mission statement.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Me and Ryan are the equivalent of a two-doctor equine practice in 1976. Just still doing everything on paper,
With no technician.
No technicians. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. That's the other thing that's really cool about this practice is it's a paperless practice. We don't have file cabinets. We don't have folders. We don't have, I have paper on my desk because of part of my job, but once I scan it somewhere, it's gone.
Nice.
So yeah, and that was one of the things, the vision that Dr. Bowes had for the practice. And one of the good things about him is technology. It's not something that this practice is afraid of. So anytime something new comes, like we use something called a lameness locator that all our doctors have. I'm sure Ryan, you've seen it in use.
Yeah.
Where it actually measures the horse's steps and their strides and can tell you, you visually will look at them initially and see if where their lameness is. And then you'll put the lameness locator on them and it'll show you, yep, it is lame where you saw, but guess what? It's also a little bit lame here. And it just is the coolest, piece of technology. One of the coolest pieces of technologies that we have.
Yeah. So it's very cool. Objective. Yeah.
That's good. And they're just very good. Good piece of cheese. And they're very good at just providing, everything that their veterinarians need to do their job. So,
pretty cool. Sandy Leslie, it was awesome to meet you.
Leslie's my last name. You could just say Sandy.
Oh, okay. I thought that's what I said.
I just didn't want you to think it was my full name, my first name.
Yeah, that's just her first name. Yep. She's got one of those.
Sandy Leslie.
Amy Jo.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. Oh, heck yeah. Yeah. You were a real treat, but I have the same kind of name, John Ryan,
John Ryan.
Yeah.
And everybody calls me John Ryan. So
I get called Leslie and I used to ignore it, but now I'm like, no, my name is Sandy. I'm like, don't worry. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
It happens all the time, but my name is Sandy. But thank you so much. I appreciate this and the opportunity.
We do too.
Just having a perspective of a practice manager that was a technician. I mean, it'll be really valuable for people to hear, especially with in a growing practice. And I just think it adds a lot of, optimism to the veterinary industry when you see something success.
I do think too, I had for AAEVT a couple years back when it was COVID time, I was supposed to give a presentation and I did an online thing. And, it was just for technicians basically to say, listen, if you think of something that you want to be or look where your growth is in your practice and, can you grow in the practice you're in and what, kind of just given steps of what you can do to achieve that, because that's pretty much, what I did and just looked around and said, where is there a void or what needs to be filled here or how can I help or how can I better things? And, unfortunately, some of the technicians that I actually spoke with directly, they're just not in an environment that allows that growth, which is, it's unfortunate for them, but at least ask. Never hurts to ask and find out, So
it's the 20 seconds of bravery that we talk about where you just have to, I'm sure you don't need the 20 seconds of bravery here.
I'm brave all the time, Ryan. No, I'm kidding. Ryan knows why I'm saying that.
No, but ask.
The D with skills.
Yeah. It doesn't hurt to ask. Yeah. If we can empower everyone to say what they think.
And I think that's what this practice does. It gives everybody the ability to just, talk. And like I said, they're very transparent about things. And you never sit at that table and feel like these are the owners and these are the assistants and these are the technicians. It's just, we're all working for the same goal and, just in the same group and everybody's voice matters.
And your table is what? 10 by 10? Your conference table? It's pretty big.
It's pretty big.
How do you make it bigger with all the expansion?
We have benches. No,
I know. There's a hierarchy.
Fortunately, three of them, most of the times, four of them are on Zoom. So
Okay.
All right. It works. We have an extra chair. We have benches. Helen will stay in her seat. She doesn't come to the table.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's a square table. So everyone's like, the Knights of the Round Table type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
It's actually trying to think of the company. What is the company called? Something Barn. Pottery Barn. Those are Pottery Barn dining room tables, Ryan.
Wow. Nice. Wow.
Two of them put together.
Well, I didn't know that. All right. Okay.
Yeah. That's our designer's vision. So
Yeah. It's also stylish.
Yeah.
No, it's a nice table.
Yeah.
It's a really nice table. I do say so myself. So It's fun.
Next time on Valiumentis, we will talk about the finer points of practice decorating.
There you go. Pottery barn.
Pottery barn.
Contemporary. All right. Well, you have a wonderful evening. Thanks for being on here.
Well, thank you so much. Absolutely. Awesome.
All right.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
It's wonderful to meet you.
Oh, yeah, thank you so much. Nice to meet you as well. I appreciate it.
All right.
All right, Ryan. We'll see you next time.
Yep.
All right. Take care. Thank you. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
How lucky are you to get to work with that person?
Yeah.
Dang. She's lovely. I'm sure
you can name some practice managers in your world.
Absolutely. Yeah. But she's great and super knowledgeable. And yeah, that was really a treat to get to spend that time with her for sure.
I mean, even though she says there's this magic about the practice, she had a lot of great specific points about what makes the magic. It's not like it's just an idea. There are things in practice. And so hopefully people can catch those thoughts about what makes a psychologically safe where everyone feels invested, everyone gets to have their work-life balance, and how to handle that growth. You know, we have to have the right environment to create growth.
Agreed.
So,
yeah. A lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah. All right. Okay. All right, man. Good luck.
See ya. Yep.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Do you have feedback? Community is the primary mission of the podcast. Do you have a comment or suggestion from an episode? For an opportunity to be featured, please record your feedback on our website's feedback sidebar button. You can record up to 5 minutes. For more about Valiumentis, go to valiumentis.com. Find us on Facebook and Instagram. If you want to support this project, please click on the Patreon link in the show notes. If you enjoyed, please subscribe, rate, and review. Thank you.